Live from the WGY studios every Sunday,
this is the Paul Potrat Show.
Stop spraying and praying. You're wasting money.
Millennials aren't lazy. It's how you lead them.
When you sell by price, you die by price.
The Paul Potrat Show, helping your business grow and stay relevant.
Covering the latest technology for business, leadership trends, and changing your mindset on marketing.
Now, your hosts, Paul Potrat, the business architect, and Samantha Zewalinski, the millennial entrepreneur.
So in today's episode, we'll be talking about how being a storyteller is your competitive advantage, how you're demotivating your team, and coffee is for closers. So let's start by talking about storytelling. This is something, Paul, you're actually really good at, and I'm not so great.
Oh, boy. I don't know if you're making fun of me or picking on me or what, that I like to tell stories. But, I mean, think about it. I mean, storytelling is important in the sense that if I was to give you a bunch of just random facts, or not necessarily random, but if I was to give you facts, if I was just starting to name off numbers and tell all that, I mean, you're not going to really remember it. I mean, we're programmed as human beings to remember stories. And I mean, so just kind of, I know I'm kind of rambling here in a sense, but how many songs can you think of the words to?
When they're on the radio, I can think of a lot of them.
Exactly. So it's storytelling. Mm-hmm. And I mean, when you were growing up, did your mom used to read you stories and tell you stories?
Of course. Bedtime stories, right?
Exactly. So here's a really quick, and I know that we just recently read an article about storytelling that I want you to get into it, but I want to tell you a story real quick, okay?
Okay, go for it.
All right. So everybody pull their chair up really close. Here's our story. Are you ready?
Turn your radio up.
Turn your radio up. All right, here it is. So there's this art gallery. In this art gallery, and I'm gonna tell the story like I was there, okay? And I wasn't. So I go into this art gallery, and on the wall is a picture of pigs swimming in this crystal blue water. Have you ever seen a picture of swimming pigs before? Actually, if you think about it, have you ever seen a picture of swimming pigs?
Not prior to Googling this.
Okay.
I'll tell you that.
All right. So this is a true story in the sense that swimming pigs. So I go into this art gallery and I see a picture of swimming pigs in the crystal blue ocean. And I'm like, wow, that's interesting. Who would actually buy a picture of pigs swimming in the ocean and hang on their wall?
If you like salty bacon.
Yes. Figured you'd go there about eating something, some type of animal.
Is that a poor joke?
No. But so anyway. So I asked the guy, I was like, hey, that's a cute picture. Why do you have a picture of swimming pigs? I mean, who would actually buy that? And that would look really good in my living room. And the guy said, well, let me tell you the story about the swimming pigs. So there was this guy years ago, and what he did is he took his life savings. He's in retirement. He said, I've got to figure out how I'm going to support myself because I don't have much of a life savings. So in the Bahamas has where you can go and you can more or less, it's public use of the property, that you can use this property the way you want to use this property. Anybody can go there and do it. So this guy took his life savings and he bought some pigs. He figured he'd be a pig farmer, but he could not afford to buy property, so he goes to the Bahamas. So he transports all these pigs to this island, you know, in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. But here's the problem. Pigs don't like cactus and they need to eat. But he didn't have enough money to be able to feed these pigs. So the pigs started to starve and everything. And then there was some of the local restaurant realized this. And so what the local restaurant started doing was their scraps in the evening, they would dump it in the ocean. And the way the waves go would carry it to this island. Well, there was the one little pig that was smarter than the rest of the pigs. And this pig would jump in the ocean and swim out to the food to be the first one to get to the food. Mm-hmm. So now what happens, all of the pigs realize they know what time of the day the food is coming, and they swim out and they eat this food that's coming from the restaurant. Well, it's become a tourist attraction. And the big thing is that you kind of think about it. Even when the chips are down, animals or humans can find a way to survive. So now that's a story. And you think about that. Would you buy that picture now of the swimming pigs and hang that in your house so you could tell the story? It means a lot more than just a pig. It looked like it was a pig in a swimming pool.
It's worth a lot more now.
Yeah, exactly. So storytelling makes a big difference and it's memorable. So you kind of think about that. And I mean, I told this story in our staff meeting, and whenever I tell it, people always remember that story.
It's memorable. It's relatable. You can find a parallel to it.
Right. So, I mean, and that's what's important in business, because in so many businesses are nameless, faceless businesses that I can't create, you know, I'm not relating. I'm not, there's not a connection. And, you know, we do that. I mean, that's salesmanship 101. If you're a salesperson and you go into somebody's office, you look around their office and you start trying to find, you know, commonalities and start talking about that. So why don't you tell your story and how I think this is important.
So I actually sent you an email the other day about an article I read, and I said, hey, this is a really great example of storytelling. And what it was, have you ever heard of the luggage brand Away?
No, but I read the article, so yes.
You had it prior, right?
Yes.
So I thought this was really great because it covers a couple different facets of businesses and challenges that we're focused with when releasing a new product. So this company, Away, is a suitcase company, and they launched about a year ago, and they started launching their product and had actually zero product to sell. Their product didn't come in time. They had planned this big launch. They were stuck with what can they do. So what they did was they created a book that they then used pre-ordering the book plus the gift certificate for the value of their luggage for the Christmas holiday. And in their first year, they're going to be hitting $12 million in sales. And so they utilized storytelling by actually creating a storybook. And they used social influencers. They didn't pay anybody. They used individuals they were connected with from their past businesses. And what they did was they did 40 interviews and released a book called The Places We Return To. And so it's a really great parallel because it goes with the luggage company. So it's luggage, you're traveling. In this book, it's 40 different individuals talking about the places that they continually visit. And then when you purchase the book for Christmas, you also got the gift card to be able to buy the luggage when it was released. So pre-ordering, where you mentioned earlier with the pigs, when we create and hit roadblocks, we overcome the adversity that we're faced with. So they created a whole storytelling strategy to actually sell their product, which I'm only inclined to believe is doing better than had they not.
Well, I think that's a perfect example. I mean, they, and a lot of times businesses would say, oh boy, we don't have the product, so we're going to delay this product. So they got creative. They told a story. And what was the story was about what though? The book. I mean, what was in the book?
It was 40 different stories from 40 different individuals. And it all talked about places those individuals repeatedly go or they're connected to. And actually now, if you go to their website, you can find out some of the different story segments as well, aside from that pre-release book.
So, but those 40 individuals, they also, they were travelers. They did a lot of traveling, mm-hmm. and they had a good social following. I mean, they had a pretty strong social following. Isn't that correct? I think that's what I read in the article.
Yeah. So they were well-connected people that they had connections with, they knew through different social circles. So where we always talk about use your individuals that you're connected with, that's exactly what they did. They didn't pay anybody. They just utilized those individuals they knew that they were socially influential.
Yeah. So they really created not only social proof, but they created an advertising strategy, because you kind of think about it, 40 individuals, one individual, I mean, again, they were what we would call a social lion, that they had a lot of connections socially, and not that they knew these people, you know, face to face per se, but they just had a lot of connections. So think about that. If one individual was connected to, on an average of, let's just say, since they were social lions, 2,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've got 40 times 2,000, and that's on a first name basis, more or less, that you created a strategy of free advertising, which goes really great to last week where I said, hey, be sure and build your social following. And I know you've been working on that, Sam. So, I mean, I think that's great in the sense that they told a story and they were able to sell their product even though they didn't have it ready, and able to deliver the product after it was ready. And I mean, if that was just a, you know, an everyday company that threw up, you know, their shingle more or less, you wouldn't trust them. You would say, no, I'm not going to buy this expensive book in hopes of getting a suitcase.
Yeah. That's true. So you got to use your audience. But I also think it gives a really good point to find another opportunity, even if what you're bringing to market isn't available yet. You know, and I think that's what we do as business owners, as managers, as developers of products. We stand in our own way sometimes because we're like, it's not perfect. It's not ready. Well, there's other ways we can create buzz and create and generate awareness for it. And that's exactly what they did. And it was because it correlated with a story. So if you're developing a product or releasing a new business, start telling your story now. And then when your product's ready, your audience will be built. Instead of once the product is ready, going to market with it and hoping that all of the flocks of people just come in and are like, ooh, I need this. Because it doesn't really work that way.
No, exactly. You know, and there's a lot to learn from where we're talking about storytelling here. It's not just, hey, you need to be able to tell a story that's relatable to your target audience. But what another learning exercise on this too would be, don't do the traditional means. A lot of times we want to go out and advertise a product or a service that we're selling. So what do? We try to hit the individual right between the eyes, right across the forehead, and say, buy this, buy this, mm-hmm. buy this. That we do not get creative in the way that we're promoting it. That we think we need to put the product out there and go, oh, here's a suitcase, and this suitcase is the strongest one made, and it has a lifetime warranty, and it has this, and it has this, and it's yours for only $499. Mm-hmm. And that's old school marketing, or that's not even marketing. That's old school advertising. That's just trying to Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Mm-hmm. So what are you saying our audience should do instead?
Decide what your story is going to be, and you can have multiple stories. Stories that are going, I mean, be authentic and tell the true story of why are you doing what you're doing. But, you know, you have to be careful with that. The storyline too, that it can't be all about you. It has to be relatable.
So I think it needs to be relatable. It needs to be the true authentic story. But in that, you're also trying to communicate the problem that you're solving, which is also how you're relatable, because most businesses start out of either a problem that they were fixing for themselves, a desire they had to bring something to market, to a service, to help other people. So in that, make sure you're talking about the customer and the problem you're solving for them, right? That's part of the story.
Right. Just like our caller, you know, that we, you know, have on the business breakdown where we read the notes with Adam, mm-hmm. and where Adam's gave us, you know, called in and everything, and where I'm reading the notes of what his question is going to be for today's show, I'm a little confused. How does it relate to me?
So, mm-hmm. So yeah. It helps to tell your story. It helps to build your, I hate this, but elevator pitch, kind of your business synopsis,
right,
that you need to be able to clearly articulate to people. And so often there's zero clarity in that message. And we talked about that on previous episodes as well.
Right. Clarity is critically important because, I mean, you just think about it. I mean, our attention span, and I've said this before, is less than a goldfish now. We have so many messages coming at us. All right, Sam. So that's pretty typical of us. We started out talking about storytelling. What did we move to next? What were the key points that we want everybody to just absorb?
Well, tell your story.
Tell your story.
Be authentic.
Be authentic.
Problem solve in it. So it's not all about me, me, me. It's about you as their customer.
Okay.
And then also understanding your call to action. I think we talked about, you know, pre-order. We talked about your purpose, go to market with something. So in it, you have to have a call to action. You have to have that next step. And that kind of flows into the, I think, third point is when you're advertising, don't just advertise. You want to market.
Right, exactly. Don't just try to sell your products or sell your service. You want to market. You want to get creative. And you also want to leverage your social network. So there you go.
Definitely.
Which I think brings us to a perfect segue of something you need to mention now.
So in order to figure out how to better tell your story, you can download the business archetypes on paulpotratz.com. And this is going to help find out what type of archetype you are, how to tell your story, and how to influence all of the content that your company puts out.
So an archetype, what is an archetype? I think that can get confusing and a lot of people don't realize, but there's on average 12 different type of 12 archetypes. There you go. So what is an archetype?
So a business archetype is essentially the personality or the traits in which you remind people of or leave people with for your business. So there's like 12 different kinds. I know the magician is one, for example. The rebel is another.
Right. There's also the explorer. I mean, so there's a lot of different archetypes, and this will help you form your marketing message. Because again, we talked about being relatable, and that's what's important is being relatable. But I think what, you know, just download it.
Well, it's essentially a story. So when you tell a story, you relate to one of those types of characters, maybe more so is an easy way to explain it.
Right.
So if you download the archetyped guide quiz, you'll be able to find out what character within that story you're playing as a business and then make sure people are relatable to it.
Yeah, because I mean, it's really important to understand the archetype that you follow, because then you will reach a different target market and how you present your products or your services. So yeah, download it. That's just the simplest way. Download it, read it. It's entertaining. And it will definitely help you form your message in a much better platform.
Be a better storyteller.
Yeah, be a better storyteller. Exactly. So there you go.
So if you're going to download it, you're going to need to visit paulpotratz.com. That's paulpotratz.com. And you'll be able to download the business archetype to influence your business starting today. And so let's get into our next segment, which is our leadership topic. And one thing we've been having a conversation around, and I think it's important that we use things in our business that are influencing our conversation today. And one of them was how you're demotivating your team and how a lot of businesses demotivate their staff, their team, by doing a few different things. Anywhere where I'm going with this?
Yeah, you know, and I used to really struggle with this one. I used to do it so much, and then I made a complete 180 shift and went the other direction too far.
Micromanaging?
Yes, exactly. And I didn't really look at it as micromanaging. I mean, you know,
being kind of a dirty word.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's, I remember this. Nah, I wouldn't even go there. But anyway, I'm going to go there. This one place I used to work for, and I was in sales, and they were always pushing me to get out the door and go knock on doors. And that wasn't my MO for sales. My MO was to work the phone. So where somebody would get in a car and have to drive to that storefront, to that business, and get kicked out, mine was to work the phone and work off of appointments. So I would always get relaxed, and I would, you know, use my voice, my tonal range and everything when I was talking to the individuals. And I remember I was kicked back. I was relaxed because I was talking to this one business, getting ready to close the deal. And I had my feet on top of the plastic trash can. And the boss walked there and said, "Paul, get your feet down and why are you still in the building?" And I'm like, "Dude, I'm billing $1 million." And I didn't say that. I was just like, "Yes, sir." But I was demotivated. I was irritated. I was closing a deal to be able to make more money, getting relaxed. So micromanagement. But I know I did it when we started the ad agency too, a lot of times. Poor Dan, bless his heart. So let's talk about micromanagement and what I mean by that.
Yeah. So I think there's a few different ways that people tend to micromanage within a business. And so I would say probably one is because we always want to tell our team what to do and how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so essentially when it comes to, for example, like working on projects, a lot of times we micromanage on a specific task, and either it's we want to go in and change it because we as managers want to put our stamp on that before it leaves the door. So that's one way we micromanage.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you think about it. I mean, how many times... Yes, I'm talking to you right now, not you, but you, that how many times have you been working on a project, and let's just say that project was something like writing a press release, and someone put their heart and soul into it, but you had to go through and you had to change things, and you, no, do this line, say this, say this, say that. And when you do that as a manager, what is that really doing to that individual? And if you continue to do it over and over and over, what does that do to that individual, Sam?
Well, you're doing two things. You're one, you're demotivating them. But two, you're also really destroying their confidence as well. I think that's something we don't think about when we make changes to what our team is working on. If they put their blood, sweat, and tears into it, and we're so proud, handed it to you, and was like, "Look at this fabulous project." And then you're like, "Change this, change this, change this." Not only are you demotivating them, but you're destroying their confidence that now they're going to start coming to you and just asking you to tell them what to do.
Yeah. And I learned about that where we do surveys internally, but I learned about this years ago that, you know, the team would say, "I'm not really going to work that hard on it. Paul's going to tell me what he wants anyway. So I'm just going to sit back." So they would just kind of slop something together because they knew I was going to make all of these changes. So, I mean, and I can see that. I can completely understand that. He's going to make all these changes. So why am I going to really try to do the best
job? Team to do that. Train your team to do that. And I think that brings us to the two other points I want to just mention, because I think they really bleed into what we're talking about. The two other points of demotivating and micromanaging are you feel like you're doing it for the betterment of a project, which is really what we're talking about. That manager thinks, that owner thinks, "Hey, if I change these things, that project's really going to be better." And the third one is doing it because the team didn't understand. So it's a lack of clarity from whomever delegated the project. And I think those are two big things that really can be troubleshooted at the onset and delegation of that project to begin with.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you think about it, starting with number three, If they're not creating the project the way you wanted to create the project, then there was no clarity. So you failed as a manager. You did not really explain what were the deliverables. What did you want it to look like? When did you want it by? You know, so you you really failed as a manager. It's simple as that.
And one thing we'll talk about in an upcoming episode is how you need to hire to make sure that your team really understands your mission, your goal of your project, and thinks and acts like you. But a lot of the time, our organizations don't necessarily hire based on that. So when you're communicating a project, you just automatically assume, or you hope, that your team's going to understand the direction you're going in, what you want them to do with it. But the truth is, that doesn't always happen. So it's the lack of clarity you're giving, the lack of information. You're just assuming that team's going to say, oh, I know what Paul wants, or I know what Samantha wants. I know I've done it a ton of times. Why can't they just do it how I see it in my head? Well, I have to tell them how I see it in my head, not hope that they can get in there and understand it.
Right. And you also, too, I mean, we have to think about as managers, as leaders, too. Is our way really a better way? Is it really going to affect the outcome? And I mean, you know, so many times being in an ad agency that we'll have clients that will tweak a project and tweak it and tweak it and tweak it and tweak it. And you're like, and you're thinking, okay, the way that they're going, is that going to help them on their bottom line? Is that going to help them sell more? And oftentimes the answer is no. And I mean, we do that as managers. So you have to really think, am I working in the business or am I working on the business?
And if we destroy their confidence, give our stamp of approval on everything, change everything, how are we ever going to get new ideas? Because to your point, our ideas aren't always the best, even though we may think they are.
Right, exactly.
But that's what we want our team to do, is to come to the table and say, hey, here's this great idea, or hey, this is how I built it out, and this is why.
Yeah. And I mean, if you're a business owner or if you're a manager, and I know this is hard for managers, I'm going to say, but if you're a business owner, we talk about, is there light at the end of the tunnel? In other words, will I be able to have a team that's so proficient that they will be able to replace me, that if I was to leave this business for 6 months, that the business would continue to, you know, would continue to go on and grow? And as a business owner, that's what you need to be doing. How do I train my team to be the best? As a manager, and this is hard for managers, because if they don't own the company, how do I find people that are smarter than me, better than me, and more talented than I am? But a lot of times managers don't want to do that because they're scared, oh, I'm training my replacement. And that's not the fact of it. I mean, think about the really good companies out there, the really big companies. They have a lot of really talented individuals that are smarter than themselves.
If you're the manager, your team should be smarter than you, because you should be leading them, not doing their job.
Right, exactly. And if your team is not smarter than you as a manager, you've got problems.
And I think as a small business, you can still do that. It may be a little bit more challenging because you need to actually do part of that job or part of the things that fall into your department. But your team should still be smarter than you in certain aspects of your business, because then why do you need them if they're not?
Right. I mean, it's so true. But it's a big fear factor. I mean, I know, you know, not saying any names, Dan bless his heart, that...
For everybody who's listening, he's in the room with us, so we're not talking behind anybody's back.
No, he's sitting
So if you
right
hear
here.
Some giggles in the background, that's from Dan, who we're talking about.
So quick story.
Yep.
So when we were starting the agency, Dan was our sole graphic designer, and he would create like 18 ads a day. Great designer. But we said, you know what? That's too much work, because if Dan wants to take vacation, get married or anything like that, forget it. You can't do it. So we hired an individual, another graphic designer, and Dan did whatever he could do to set this guy up for failure, because Dan was afraid that he was training his replacement. Well, you know, years passed on and everything. And now
12 years later, Dan's still there.
12 years later, Dan's still, you know, a key player. And we went from one designer to several designers to 50 employees. So I think that's important to think about as a manager.
So to wrap this part up, how do we make sure we don't demotivate our team?
So the first step is to make sure that if you're making a change, that it really is a critical change, that it's important. I mean, just don't want to put your seal of approval on it. And the second one is to make sure that you have complete clarity in what you're wanting the project to be. And then what else comes to mind, Sam?
Make sure you explain your changes. I think we forget that too.
Yes, that's true.
Provide value in why you're changing them, so the team can learn. And then next time they do it, they make that change themselves.
Exactly. So...
So you're listening to the Paul Potrat Show. We're going to take a quick break, but for more information on segments this week, you can listen to us live on the iHeartRadio app. The Paul Potrat Show. We'll be right back.
It's time for the Business Breakdown.
The 7-minute on-air consultation for you.
Call now for your free business consultation with Paul and Samantha. 1-855-POTRATS.
That's 1-855-768-7289.
Now, let's break it down.
So we have our first caller on the line. Caller, what is your name and what business are you calling from?
Hi, this is Adam Mason, and my business is Center Square Software, LLC.
Okay, hi, Adam. Thanks for calling in today. What is your question for Paul?
Sure. So I am a startup business. So my question is, how do we get businesses, organizations, and users to try a new app that allows those businesses to reach their customers using innovative technology like near-field communication, which, for example, could replace window stickers on vehicles, or Bluetooth beacons that allow the mapping of, like, a mall and can also allow those businesses to send out advertising messages.
Okay, Adam. So here's a quick question. What exactly does it do?
Sure. So the app is making it so that a user doesn't have to download individual apps for each business that they go into. And when they walk into that business, they're getting a notification on their phone, and they're seeing all the promotions that are available to them, like coupons, deals, events. And also when they're sitting at home, they're also able to see what's nearby, a local restaurant, a local retail store, etc.
Okay. So it's still a little confusing because I just think about everyone's time and how they're pushed for time. So it's really creating a unique selling proposition on this, because when you were telling me about what it does, I'm thinking through it. I'm like, okay, why is that any different than, let's say, Facebook events? Why is that any different than OpenTable? And I think that's the important part. You've got to really drill in on it, because you mentioned window stickers and then you mentioned people going into businesses. So you've got to decide, who are you going after? And, you know, if you want people to download it, then who are you going after and why does it benefit them? But you have to really, really simplify that, because you think about our attention span, and our attention span is less than a goldfish. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
It is. Now, how do I identify who an early adopter is and understand what kind of benefits they're looking for?
Well, do you have any downloads yet?
So the app actually just came out at the beginning of June.
Mm-hmm.
So we have about 50, 75 downloads, and that was from without really any publicity besides we were in a finalist in the Saratoga Springs, their smart city competition. And we've been through a couple of the business accelerators from the local colleges like RPI and SUNY Albany. Otherwise, we haven't really been marketing it.
Okay. So I would try to get in contact with those 50 to 75 individuals, you know, as many as you can get in contact with, and find out what are they, you know, what's their feedback about the app? You know, what's it doing for them? How's it helping them? And, you know, they don't have to write a book or, you know, even a paragraph. You're just looking for some bullet points, because what we think about our own product or our own service, you know, the benefits isn't really what, you know, the client thinks that is the benefit. So you've got to find out what's special about that app from those individuals, and now that's going to allow you to market it, so it makes it really simplified, so someone can say, yeah, okay, now this makes sense, I want to use it, I want to utilize it. And then, you know, I would build, you know, a tribe around those individuals. So those individuals that are, you know, using the app, granted 50 to 75, I don't know how many of them are still using it. It might only be 5, it might be 45. So am I making sense to you, what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. So you're really trying to find out a mind map. You're trying to find out what's important to them about it. Why do they use it? Why do they like it? And now you have a marketing message to go out to market with. Because, again, you know, when you started out, you talked about, you know, window stickers, you talked about coupons and businesses. So you've got to really drill in.
And in that, when you're getting that feedback, you want to make sure that you're also asking them to review you in the app store, because that's going to be the social proof that you should have other individuals download the app as well and then continue the usability of it.
Yes, that sounds like a very good idea. Yeah, good point.
Yep.
Because you know, we have, you know, because what the thing was is that, you know, we saw that, you know, like you said, there's other platforms that have these things, but they're fragmented. And so we've decided to put over 20 categories of businesses and organizations into one app. So we're trying to simplify the process of people doing the local search on events and deals and not having to go searching for coupons when they walk into a business. It's just automatically is delivered to their smartphone.
Right. Yeah, so again, I mean, get in touch with as many people as you can that's downloaded the app. Find out, you know, how they've benefited from it, and then get them to start posting, you know, encourage them to start posting and talking about it, because what's really important is to get them talking about the app and how it benefits them, because then it becomes not a marketing message. It becomes something that's going to either save them time or save them money.
And you provide clarity in your message. You'll find out what's keeping them engaged with it, and that'll, to the earlier part of your conversation with Paul, provide the clarity to go to market and talk to other individuals, businesses about getting on board.
Adam, thank you for your call, and I hope we helped you out there.
Thank you so much. This has been fantastic.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So Adam was our first caller of the day, but you can be our next on the Business Breakdown. Give us a call at 855-POTRATS. That's 855-POTRATZ, where you can record your name, business, and question, and we'll get back to you to be featured on an upcoming episode of the Business Breakdown. But for now, we have our second caller of the day on the line. Caller, what's your name and what's your business?
My name is Emma Rugoff, and my business is Emma's Dog Grooming.
Hi, Emma. Thank you for calling in. What is your question for Paul?
My question for Paul is, besides the standard, you know, business card, flyer, and tangible items, social media, besides those, what are other ways that I can expand my business and promote my business under a pretty low salary and a pretty low price?
Okay. Excellent. Well, thanks for calling in, Emma. How long have you been open now?
I've only been open for about 4 months. This is very recent. I'm 22. You know, I'm still young. I'm just starting out, so...
Okay, excellent. Well, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So have you created any cross promotions, like with, Furlocity? Furlocity is a local company that's kind of like Travelocity, except it's for pets and pet care. So I would look at Furlocity, and there's three other websites. I believe there's three that's a lot like Furlocity, where, you know, pet owners will go and they'll try to find groomers, they'll try to find pet care, you know, any number of things. So I would look at those to start off with.
Okay. Do you know if those are, if you have to pay for those? I'm sure.
I think they have all different types of levels, you know, different packages where you can have the free level or you can do paid. I think that's what a lot of the sites do. And I mean, it's just depending on if you pay, whether or not you show up higher in the list. And sure. Then the next thing is too, I mean, you have a website in place too?
I'm actually working on a website right now. I'm employed. The place that I'm employed is the Albany Pet Lodge. It's actually a kennel, boarding, and daycare facility. They're located on Terminal Drive, 11 Terminal Drive in Latham. And so it's kind of like, you know, I'm attached to them. I'm my own groomer and I have my own business, but I'm also employed by them, you know, through commission. So I was thinking maybe of putting a website attached to them aside from doing my own website. Do you suggest maybe starting with just doing a website off of them and then making my own, or should I do my own from the start?
Well, I mean, I would do your own. What's your long-term goal? If your long-term goal is to be able to make this a full-time business where you can live off of it, then I would do your own website, because it's going to take some time for the search engine optimization to kick in. But in the meantime, while you're doing that website, I would say get a Facebook page up, and not a personal profile, but a business profile.
Right.
And start.
I do have one of those actually right now. I don't know if it's through the Facebook app where it's the business. It's a separate page, but it is attached to my Facebook page, so I can share mm-hmm. things through my Facebook personally.
Yep.
But it is its own Facebook page, and I put promotions and, you know, I post pictures of all the dogs that I groom before and after, so kind of people can see on Facebook. I do feel Facebook is a big, you know, one of the bigger social medias for kind of the people that are looking to groom dogs. They want to see my work. They want to see if I'm any good before, you know, so photos as well. But I do have a Facebook page, so that's something I am working on. But it does cost money to promote aside from people that you have as friends. So it is a little costly, but I am doing that as well. So that's something I'm...
Yeah, and I would spend more time on that Facebook page than I would on your website, to be honest. Because think about your website. You build a website. Now the goal is, how do we get people to your website? How do you get traffic to it? And that's a lot of work. So, I mean, I have an analogy. So think about the analogy this way, that if you go by a mall and there's really nobody in the parking lot of the mall, are you going to stop by? Chances are no. So if you go by a mall that has a lot of cars in the parking lot, you're going to stop by. And that's the way I consider Facebook. Facebook to be, that there's a lot of traffic already there. So part of your Facebook strategy to grow this business should be go and find additional groups. I mean, like the 518 Entrepreneurs and the Capital Region. And so become part of all these various groups, and don't forget the local, you know, all the ASPCA chapters and the, because, you know, when an individual or a couple's looking for somewhere to keep their dog, I mean, I'm just going to put a guess out there, but I would say that they would probably call the ASPCA or, you know, one of the local, what's the word I'm looking for, Samantha, where you go and you adopt the dogs.
Local adoption agencies.
Yeah, the adoption agencies. Yeah. There you go. So I would friend them on Facebook and let them know. So create some cross promotion, because the whole idea is to create that word of mouth advertising.
And two things you can do there too is pet stores that don't have their own grooming business, work with them and create either a referral program or another type of opportunity where, like Paul's saying, you can cross promote one another. The additional thing there too, where Paul was mentioning your Facebook page, have you done anything to request reviews from customers of yours?
I've had just friends that have come to me, you know, like good friends that have wrote reviews. I mean, I hope I did do a good job when they say I did a good job. But, you know, just kind of like 5 stars, 4 stars for friends. But I haven't had any real, like, strangers that have come in and then, you know, commented like, wow, she did a great job. It's really kind of been, like, more personal. So I haven't really done more of that. But I know word of mouth is, like, the biggest way to promote your business. So I know that's definitely a big part.
Yeah, and I would spend some time and go around and go to the different chambers of commerce, you know, the Capital Region, Schenectady one, the Saratoga one, and just go in and meet those individuals, because they definitely come in contact with a lot of people, and that's going to help you with the word of mouth. And then, you know, you could even, I would go and do some of their meetings too and see if it makes sense.
And also ask your customers for referrals. People who own pets know other people who own pets but may not think to make the recommendation to come to you as a groomer. So you want to also make the ask.
And then here's the final thing that I want, that we want you to do too. Okay. So everyone you come in contact with, I want you to make sure you get their email address and get their mobile number and keep up with that information and start sending emails out to these individuals, just letting them know that you're in business and that you appreciate their business and if there's anything you can do, but you know that that your business is based off of referrals. But make sure, you know, if you're not keeping that database, you're having to do a lot of work. And don't forget, you know, LinkedIn's a good tool to use also.
LinkedIn. Okay. Yeah, I've heard of LinkedIn. I haven't set one up yet. I know it does cost money, but I've heard it's been really, really good for a lot of business. So I will definitely look into that. Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Emma, for calling in. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but thanks for your call and good luck with your business.
Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it. Thanks again.
Thank you,
Emma. Have a great day, okay?
You too.
All right. So we have our third caller of the day on the line. Caller, what's your name and what's your business?
Margaret Rice, and my business is Blothers.com.
Hi, Margaret. Thanks for calling in. What is your question for Paul this morning?
What is the best paid marketing strategy to drive traffic to a website? I run two very successful and profitable websites, and I'm starting a brand new one. And I've tried Facebook ads and promoting pins in the past, but I've really had more success with regular posts and pins versus paid advertising. And I'm wondering what I can do to improve, since my newest venture is a whole new niche than what I've been doing previously.
Okay, Margaret, thanks for calling. So here's a question. On your other two websites that have been successful, is there no crossover at all?
No, there is. Those two cross over a little bit. All three cross a little bit.
Okay. So if all three cross a little bit, I would work that database. Hopefully you've been able to capture individuals' emails and mobile numbers.
Yeah, I have over about 35,000 email subscribers.
All right, great. So I would definitely be working that. And one thing that I would do for paid advertising, if you have those, you know, the 35,000 subscribers, to have that many subscribers, you probably have a lot more traffic than that coming to those two websites. So I would add retargeting to those two websites. That's a really affordable paid advertising strategy. Retargeting, just kind of clarified a little bit, someone comes to your website, they pick up a code, they leave your website, and the ads start following them around.
Okay.
So
like a Facebook ad.
Yeah,
like the pixel in.
Yes, like a Facebook ad, but go ahead, Sam.
So you can do it on Facebook. Facebook does offer retargeting. However, you can also do it through ad networks, for example, like Google. And if you ever go, for example, to like CNN.com or a local, even WGY's website, you'll see graphic-based ads. And if you click on those ads, they'll lead over to a website. So it's just another form of an advertisement. There's like over 13 different ad sizes. But what they'll do is they'll follow an individual around to the website of their choice and then allow them to click the ad and go back to your website to finalize that purchase or repurchase.
Okay, but my question is, because the new website really is a completely different customer market, I can't really use retargeting because I barely have any traffic there yet.
Right.
I could definitely do that on my other two websites. I understand that. But for the new one, I like 10 views a day. I just started it last week. I just launched it.
Right, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. Leverage those other websites with retargeting. So therefore, they see the ads and either they're going to, if they're interested in it, they'll click. And if they're not interested in it, since there's going to be a part of that audience that, you know, is not going to be interested in it, then they won't click. And the thing with retargeting, you can build your campaigns where it's, you know, based per click and not necessarily per impression. So it's an affordable way of advertising. So you can do it, you know, on, for example, with Facebook. You can also do it in LinkedIn too. So I would definitely, you know, you can do it on YouTube, and I mean, the list goes on. So that would be the paid advertising portion that I would start with. I would start doing that, get that, you know, get that really accomplished, make sure that your ads are making sense. And then the next step I would move over to, depending, because I don't know what your product or the service is, but I would imagine that there'd be a way that you could explain it in video. So if you can explain it in video, then I would move into using video.
Okay.
And I would use video on the Facebook network, and I would use video on YouTube also. And again, that's you can do that through retargeting code again, but then you can also pick up what we call interest. So interest meaning that if someone's expressed, you know, a digital body language in what you're offering, even though they've never been to your website, you can target them through what we call interest targeting.
Okay. So you're saying run an ad for my new site on my current site with the retargeting?
No, let me kind of explain what retargeting is. Let me get into it a little deeper. Have you ever been to a website where you were shopping for something like a dress or a pair of shoes, and you left that website just to see that those shoes or that dress follow you wherever you went?
I understand what it is. But my issue is my customers.
Let me finish.
Go ahead.
So what you would do is put that code on those two webs, or actually all three websites, but have that code on all three of your websites. But the two that have traffic already, they would pick up the code off of that website. But then your ads, you would put the URL in the ad to your new website. So you're just using more or less the two existing websites that have good traffic as a driver to drive traffic to your new website.
So the answer to your question is yes. Essentially, the retargeting ads from your two existing websites would drive traffic to your brand new website. And that's going to be more affordable than looking to prospect new customers initially. You can do both, but that's going to be what can drive repurchases or new purchases off of your new product.
Yeah, so just keep in mind, though, you just because they're picking up the code on the two websites that already have traffic, you do not have to drive them back to those websites. You can drive them to the new website, and that's what's going to help increase your traffic.
And if you're doing that, one thing you can do is look at driving customers to a landing page. Make sure your website clearly communicates what the product is, the benefit to the consumer. And video, where Paul mentioned earlier, would be a great way to communicate that message, as well as use your database. So we didn't even mention that, but introduce your new product, your new service to your existing database of customers. A video would be a great way to do that. Then that way they're putting a face to the name, to the business that they're already supporting, and come over to your new entity.
So yeah, definitely get an email put together and send an email out to those 35,000 subscribers explaining the new venture, and tell them to be sure and share it if they find interest, and you know, share it with a friend. And I would even consider creating some type of a friend referral program to go to your database. And just don't email them once. I mean, you want to email them more than once. And then here's a key to email marketing is whatever your subject line is on the first email, don't change it on the second email. Just put RE before, you know, like a reply, and send them the second email that's basically, hey, last week I sent you this email, it's below, just wanted to remind you. And I would do that at least 3 or 4 times. So I hope we helped you with that, but thanks for your call.
All right, have a good day.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks. Thank you. If you didn't get a chance to call in this week, it's not too late to be featured on the Business Breakdown in an upcoming episode. To do so, call us at 855-POTRATS. That's 855-POTRATS with a Z, and we'll select some of the best calls to be featured on an upcoming show. So one thing we talked to one of the callers today about was networking and reaching out to other individuals in market to be able to utilize connections and referrals for their business. So I kind of teased earlier that coffee is for closers. So let's talk a little bit about that and how that can help our audience's business.
All right. Sounds good to me. It reminds me of the movie, too. This movie was before your time, Samantha. But okay. Do you know where that came from?
It came from a movie
before
my time.
Yeah, Glengarry Glen Ross, Coffee's for Closers. So
I've definitely heard the clip, but I've never seen the movie.
You should go to YouTube and watch it. It's maybe you shouldn't. It's a little vulgar. It's a little carried away. So yeah. So whenever we ask somebody what is the best type of advertising, what do they always say?
Word of mouth advertising.
Word of mouth. There you go.
You ever know when something's on the tip of your tongue and you really can't say it? The words were on my tongue for word of mouth advertising.
Yeah. So, I mean, think about that. So we were in the office and we were talking to one of our team members and we brought that up. And what was her approach that we said, why don't you ask somebody out for coffee?
Ooh, it was, I think, objection. Initial scared, I think. I think that's a fair term to use.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure if it was scared or if it was excitement to think, oh wow, okay, yeah.
Well, I think it was scared about the initial act of maybe doing it, but I think once we kind of talked about it, it was like, ooh, I see how that could be really awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, so coffee for closers, why don't you explain what we really mean by that?
So often we just think within our own walls, within our own associations. So one really great thing to do as a entrepreneur, as a business owner, as a manager, I think this is really a great point for managers, salespeople, is to extend your audience. We talked about growing your Facebook page. So as you're growing your Facebook likes and friends to 5,000, ask somebody to coffee. Simply make an introduction through any of the social platforms, or even Paul, you know, we work together. I could say, hey, Paul, do you know anybody I'd be beneficial to go meet with for coffee? And then what you can do in this is just ask him to coffee, get together and talk.
Yeah, simple as that. I mean, you kind of think about it. I mean, with technology and social media and everything else that we have right now, that I feel like that our face-to-face meetings just start, they're suffering. We don't do the same things. And a lot of times, you know, the membership of churches is going down. The membership of the Rotary Club is going down. The membership of Toastmasters. I mean, all of these civic organizations, membership is going down because we just don't get out and talk to people face to face, that we don't do one-on-one conversation.
And we don't build those connections that are ultimately going to help build our businesses. And that's what this is about. You're more likely to say, hey, I personally know this individual and I can say I've had a great conversation with them. You know, they're really relatable, compared to saying, hey, let me pull up my Facebook friends and see if there's some random person that works for such organization or such type of business.
Right, exactly. But why do you think people would be fearful of this?
Because they're putting themselves out there.
Rejection.
They're
scared of rejection. So why don't we give a creative tip? If you ask somebody for coffee and they keep on saying, I don't have time, I don't have time. First, understand why they don't have time. It mm-hmm. could be a couple different reasons. What's the first thing that comes to mind of why they wouldn't have time?
Well, if they're like somebody like us, we travel a lot. So yep. We're physically maybe not in the office, the state, to be able to meet with somebody.
Okay. So
that could be one.
Exactly. So they really, truly are busy.
But another one could be they don't see any value in it. They're not sure why you want to get together. They're just as intimidated by going to get coffee as you were to ask them.
Right. So two different things. So they didn't see value or intimidation, that they're like, oh, I never really met this person.
Either.
Yeah, I don't really know them. So in that case, then why not invite a few people to coffee? Hey, I'm getting together with blank, blank, and mm-hmm. blank, and blank. Would you like to meet us for coffee at so-and-so day, so-and-so time? So, you know, bring that threshold down, that the nervousness of it, because that's a group of people that's coming.
And the other thing too is that makes conversation a lot easier. You take all of the pressure off that one person and yourself.
Right, exactly. And then let's say that there's that key individual that you keep on trying to go to coffee, you know, have coffee with, and you can't get them to have coffee. What should you do? Do you have a really cool marketing tip for us, a little strategy?
Why don't you bring coffee to them?
There you go. Yeah.
So don't let objections stand in your way, kind of like the pre-order, the storytelling earlier. You can overcome an objection by going to them. And even if they don't have time, what can maybe somebody do? Bring coffee to them, make an introduction, leave them with a little note or something like that ahead of time. And then that way you've made your impression. Next time you make that ask, they'll be more inclined to at least schedule with you instead of just saying no.
Yeah. A quick story and about bringing coffee. There was an individual that wrote an article about me, and I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool. He's got a blog site. So what I did is I did a little bit of research on him, and I sent him some coffee and some other items, just mailed it to him because he was well across the country. And that the benefit was huge. I ended up speaking at different conferences because I never knew how well he was connected. So the moral of the story is start reaching out and keep on reaching out. 20 touches a day.
So that's it for today's Paul Potrat Show. Today's actionable topics were being a storyteller is your competitive advantage, how you're demotivating your team, and coffee is for closers. If you missed any of today's conversation, you can listen to it on the iHeartRadio app. And be sure to find and like the Paul Potrats page on Facebook, where we'll be sharing strategies and continuing today's conversation again on the Paul Potrats Facebook page.
You've been listening to The Paul Potrat Show. Paul is the architect behind Potrat's Advertising, an international consulting and advertising agency based in Schenectady, New York.
For more info or to learn how to work with Paul and the Potrat's team to grow your business and improve your processes, visit paulpotrats.com. That's Paul, P-O-T-R-A-T-Z.com.
And join Paul and Samantha next Sunday morning at 11, right here on WGY.